Welcome to another bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. A new kind of bonus episode. Today, we're going to look at one of our Ride Home Fund portfolio companies, Sensel. The idea with these episodes is that we will learn from innovative entrepreneurs and groundbreaking new companies, learning about new technologies right at their earliest stages, which is what sort of makes Sensel kind of an outlier to start off these episodes. When I started the Ride Home Fund, I never imagined that our first investment would be a hardware company and a company that's been around for the better part of a decade. We invested in Sensel's Series B round when every other investment thus far has been at the seed round or even earlier. We did so because Sensel was an opportunity we couldn't pass up. As you'll hear, touch technology as a key layer in computing interface and interaction is about to undergo a major generational leap forward, and Sensel is at the bleeding edge of this transformation. Not only is there a good chance that the next laptop you buy will have Sensel technology inside, but you'll hear how Sensel's tech could come to smartphones soon, to medical devices, to automobiles. In essence, Sensel's tech has the potential to radically transform how we interact with computers all across the real world, in real life, and even provide a key foundational layer as we build out the metaverse. Sensel reached out to us because they were listeners of this podcast, and I encourage any other startups out there who would like the power of the Mutant Podcast Army behind you to get in touch with me directly at brian@ridehomefund.com. But also, if you're interested in learning more about Sensel as an investor, as a potential technology or business partner, as a potential employee, or merely as a user, again, email me and I'll get you in touch with them or contact Sensel directly. My thanks to all the folks at Sensel, especially Ilya Rosenberg and Christian Hernandez. Thank you for partnering with us. And I can't wait to see how this technology explodes thanks to Sensel's leadership in the years ahead. Ilya Rosenberg, thank you for coming on the Tech Meme Ride Home experience, a Tech Meme Ride Home bonus episode, the first of what hopefully will be several this year, but this is the first sort of portfolio profile episode. And Ilya, you're the CEO of what was the first investment for the Ride Home Fund. So also it's fitting that you're the first episode. Ilya, you're the one of the co-founders of Sensel. So just real quick, like in a 2 minute sort of first question, give me a broad outline of what Sensel is as a company and what technology you guys do.
Yeah, so Brian, great to be on this podcast. And at a high level, at Sensel, we want to empower people in the way that they interact with their electronic devices. And we want to do that by building the best and most powerful human-computer interfaces that really increase dramatically the bandwidth of the interaction that you have with your devices, both in terms of the touch input, including touch sensing and force sensing and other sensing modalities, as well as the output, which includes haptic feedback to the user. And we want to do that because we really believe that, you know, the future that we want to have is not the WALL-E future where, you know, computers do everything for you, but the future that we are excited about is the future where, you know, we use computers as a tool and people are empowered to, you know, be more creative, be more expressive, have more fun, be more productive through their interactions with computers. And in order to do that, we need that interface to, you know, continue to improve.
Your background, actually, we're going to talk about a lot about hardware, though I know software interacting with this is a key component. But your background is as a software developer originally, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I studied computer science and computer graphics, both in my undergraduate at Princeton and my PhD at New York University. And I got interested in computer graphics. It's kind of funny how that happened. As a kid, I loved lava lamps. And I had a senior project during my undergraduate where I tried to make a virtual lava lamp, basically simulating the physics of the particles and figuring out how to do the rendering. And that's kind of how I got into computer graphics and kind of, you know, kind of, I guess that was my first love in terms of the kind of research I was doing. And that that led me into the video game industry. I wrote a paper on the techniques that I developed to do this essentially real-time rendering of a lava lamp.
Is that because, sorry to interrupt, and sure. This might be something that I misheard or something, but I feel like I've heard before that to this day, or at least until recently, like in graphics, like modeling things like, you know, water flowing in a stream or like gas diffusing is not necessarily easy to do. Am I right about that, or did I mishear that?
Yeah, that's right. It's one of the most challenging areas in computer graphics because you have to do the physical simulation of the fluid, either like particle simulation or voxel based simulation, and the physics of that is quite complex. But then to do something that's fun like a lava lamp, you also need to render that in real time and make it look really nice and realistic. So it is challenging both from the simulation side and the rendering side. And we were trying to do that in real time. So that makes it even more complex. Whereas, when you watch these effects in a Pixar movie, they're often taking, days and months to render those effects. But we were doing it, in real time, as you're running the simulation.
So that leads you to your first startup, a gaming startup, I guess?
Yeah, that's right. Around the time that the first iPhone came out, we decided to try to take some of that technology that I had developed. And I also had a friend that was also really into like fluid simulation and gaming. And we started a company to take that technology and turn that into iPhone games. So we actually built one of the first apps that was on the App Store, and it was an app called iLava, and it was basically a virtual lava lamp for your iPhone. And we built a bunch of other like physics-based, fluid-based games mm-hmm. for the iPhone.
So, how does that lead into a touch hardware technology and stuff?
Someone at Valve Software saw some of these, software demos that I was building, and invited me to come do like an internship and a consulting gig at Valve. I spent about a year working with Valve and actually built some of our technology into their engine, into the Steam engine, so actually, if you play Portal 2, there's a lot of puzzles that are based on liquids, and those games use the technology that I developed. It was an engine called Globulator, is what we called it. And then during kind of while I was working at Valve and around that time, I started to come to the realization that graphics was increasing and improving at an exponential rate, both in terms of the hardware and the software. But really, there was still this big bottleneck in terms of how we interact with our computers. I was also like at the time trying to write, trying to build some software you can do like virtual clay modeling, using the same engine and other kind of experiences. And I realized like, wow, it's really hard to do any of this with a keyboard and mouse. Like the thing that's really missing is not the hardware and the soft, like not the, the video graphics hardware and the soft video, video graphical software. It's really the interfaces that are deficient to get to kind of the next level of experiences that I wanted to kind of to see happen. That's kind of what got me into the hardware side of things.
And so that's startup number two, I'm assuming, which is TouchCo.
Yeah. So, funny enough, there was another startup in there, something I did parallel to Gotham Wave Games, which was Gotham Wave Games, my experience doing that and this other startup led to TouchCo. And this other startup, it's a whole other tangent, but it was a company called Smart Lines, and we were developing actually sensors that would get embedded into tennis courts to detect if the tennis ball was in or out.
Oh.
So that's kind of how I got exposed to the sensing hardware side of things. Because for what we were doing there, we had this big challenge where we wanted to detect the impact of a tennis ball on the surface of the court, but also know, you know, is it in or out? So you need really high precision for that. And also you need to ignore something like a footstep. So if the player steps on the line, you don't want it to buzz or whatever. And this was around the time of the Serena Williams controversy at the U.S. Open, where she had lost the game because of a bad line call. And the International Tennis Federation put out a kind of a request for people to submit their ideas for how to, you know, how to fix line calling in tennis. So we were one of the systems that went after the ITF certification. And we essentially built out several of these tennis courts with sensors, and it was system work that was awesome. But the company, you know, we took some bad investments and kind of ran out of money. And so this was around the same time I was doing Gotham Wave Games. So I was kind of trying to do two startups in parallel. And doing the stuff with Valve. And then I had this idea like, oh, could we just take some of this hardware that we were developing for SmartLine, some of the, you know, kind of the concepts, and miniaturize it and build a sensor that you could have on your desk that could, you know, sense your touch, your pressure. And so I kind of combined these two, I guess, areas that I've been working in to one, and that was the start of TouchCo.
Well, and it's so funny. We're going to talk about the technology that, you know, is behind what Sensel does, but I can see how I can see the linear progression there of, like, you know, sensitive sensing on a tennis court and keeping false positives out of it and things like that, and having actual, like, force touch and sensitive detection of force and stuff like that. So that technology is miniaturized. That's what goes into TouchCo, and then TouchCo is acquired by Amazon, and some of that stuff goes into Kindle technology.
Yeah. So at TouchCo, we kind of, like you were mentioning, we took the technology, we miniaturized it, and we built this really high resolution pressure sensitive touch technology. And we were kind of, you know, we had a cool technology looking for an application. So we were talking to a lot of different companies about, you know, different ways we could apply it. Amazon saw what we were doing. And at the time, they had just released the first Kindle, and they were looking for a way to add touch sensitivity to the Kindle. But they didn't want to put a touch sensor on top of the display because that would decrease the contrast and the brightness of it. Especially for an e-ink reflective display, if you put anything on top of it, it really kills the look of that display because there's no backlighting. So the idea was to put a flexible e-ink display on top of one of our sensors, so there's absolutely no optical impact, and build this, like, awesome, you know, Kindle reader that looks beautiful, but you have a touch sensor. And you have to remember, like, the early Kindle readers, they were very, like, steampunk. They had, like, mechanical paddles for changing the page, and they had, like, mechanical keyboards and a scroll wheel. It was, like, very retro. So they ended up acquiring TouchCo to build, you know, bring that expertise that we had in developing touch sensing technology into Amazon to help them, you know, kind of build a better user experience for the Kindle.
Well, I'm assuming that was used in the Kindle Voyage, which is my favorite version of the Kindle. For whatever reason, I buy Kindles like people buy cell phones. Every time there's a new one, I get one. And the Voyage was my favorite version of that. So I'm assuming that was your technology in there somewhere.
Yeah. So so actually, Aaron Zaraga, who's my co-founder at my new company, Sensil, at what we're talking about today, and myself, we took some of that touch code technology and we invented a way to do a virtual page turn button on the Kindle Voyage. And that was called the page press feature. And the idea behind it was that we actually embedded force sensors under the glass of the display around the bezel. And we also added in a haptic actuator technology. And by combining the force sensing and the haptics, we were able to basically virtually emulate a physical button click. So it felt like you were clicking a mechanical button, but really you were just pressing on a force sensor, and then at the right force level, a haptic click was actuated to simulate the feel of that button. And this was really the first high volume consumer electronic device that I know of that had this kind of technology. It came out, prior to the Apple Watch, which was Apple's first product to have haptics, force and haptics, and it was really exciting to see some of the TouchCo technology that we had developed, shipping in high volume in tens of millions of units. So that was a pretty awesome experience.
Well, let's not dilly-dally any further. So Sensil, I think, was founded in 2013, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And so I'm assuming the idea was to continue along these lines and take it to the next generation stuff. So instead of having you, recall all of the steps to where we are today, take me to the present day, to what Sensil is doing now, to the smart surface, and just generally this next generation of touch that Sensil is bringing into the world right now.
Yeah. So really what we're trying to do is make, integrate touch sensing, force sensing, and haptics, integrate that all together and make that available as a, kind of in a packaged form to major OEMs in the PC and mobile industries and other industries as well. And really what we've really focused on at Sensil is this concept of smart surface, where we're really combining these technologies to make a very seamless, very rich experience for the user. And it actually turns out that combining touch, force, and haptics, having the best-in-class user experience in all three of those, and doing it in a cost-effective, an efficient way, power-efficient, and thin. It's actually a very complex problem to combine those technologies. And most companies that have been around and that are in the industry that do touch sensing, force sensing, or haptics, they really have expertise in only one of those areas. And where we've really found our niche and where we've had a lot of success is in that we understand all three of these technologies. We have deep experience and intellectual property in all three of these technologies, and we can deliver a full solution to the customer. So they don't have to worry about and try to figure out how to, source three different components, how to combine them, how to write all the firmware and the software and build out the user experiences. We do all that for them in a very high performance and cost effective way.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? How about your customer base? How about your business on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow, whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Was just checking in on our Shopify store this morning, running flawlessly as it's done for nearly a decade now. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ride, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ride now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ride. In 2023, just 10 vulnerabilities accounted for over half of the incidents responded to by Arctic Wolf's incident response. Wouldn't you like to know how to take them off the table and make life more difficult for cybercriminals? That's just one of the essential insights you'll find inside the Arctic Wolf Lab's 2024 Threats Report. Authored by their elite team of security researchers, data scientists, and security development engineers, and backed by the data gained from trillions of weekly observations with thousands of unique environments, this report offers expert analysis into attack types, root causes, top vulnerabilities, TTPs, and more. Discover the attack vector behind nearly half of all successful cybercrimes, why ransom demands climbed 20% from 2023, and find out why 2024 will be an especially volatile year for cybersecurity. Learn more and get your copy now at arcticwolf.com/techmeme. That's arcticwolf.com/techmeme.
So one way maybe, normal folks would understand this is, let's think of laptops right now. If people are old enough to remember, 20 years ago, on a laptop, you'd have a touchpad plus physical buttons. And then, starting about 10 years ago, it switches to click pads where you get rid of the physical buttons. And so this is moving from just having touch to then, having haptic feedbacks and things like that. And so explain to me what this next generation is. Like, obviously there are no physical buttons. That's ancient history, but, what can I do with if I have a sensor device in my laptop in the near future, what can I do with it that I can't do right now, with a touchpad on my laptop?
So there's kind of a spectrum of advantages that you get when you start to integrate sensors technology and haptic force sensing in general. And the first kind of, if you start kind of more at the hardware side and the industrial design side, which is usually the first thing that the customer, like our customers, which are in the laptop and mobile OEMs that they care about, those first things are usually around the industrial design. So it's how big of a touchpad can I build? A mechanical touchpad just does not scale. If you try to make a big mechanical touchpad with a little click button underneath it, it just starts to fail mechanically as it gets bigger because of flatness tolerances and stiffness and all these kind of things. So that's kind of the first thing is like, I can grow the touchpad bigger. And then also, as the touchpad gets bigger, you need it to get thinner, because if you just grow it in X and Y, but you keep the same Z height, the thickness, as a traditional mechanical click pad, you start to really consume a lot of the volume that's internal to the device. And so you have less space for a battery, you have less space for other, computing things that are in the laptop. So those are kind of like the higher level things that the customers often care about, is like, how big can I make the touchpad? How thin can I make it? But then you go a level deeper and you really start to see there's a lot of user experience benefits. And again, there's kind of a hierarchy of like, there's some very basic things that you get. Things like you can do much better palm rejection. So as you have a bigger touchpad, you're more likely to rest your palm on it inadvertently. You might not even notice it. But you don't want your palm to click accidentally. If you're, you know, you just have your hand on the keyboard of a touchpad, you know, or you have your hand on the keyboard because you're typing, but part of your palm is touching the touchpad. You don't want to false click or false activate. With a haptic force pad, we can in software determine, oh, that's a palm. We're going to ignore the, you know, the force or the location of that palm, because we know that the user isn't purposely trying to press there. And at the same time, if I have my other finger on the touchpad, you know, if I have my left hand on my touching with a palm, my right hand I'm trying to click, I can at the same time see that that is an intentional touch, and I can trigger a click for that finger. And then, you know, just in general, being able to click anywhere on the surface with a consistent force, that is a huge benefit, because that allows you to be much faster, much more efficient, you know, have much less fatigue.
There's not like a hot zone on one of these. Everything is the hot zone. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like on a traditional click pad, the bottom edge clicks, but as you go higher and higher, it gets harder and harder to click, because the touchpad is essentially, you know, acting as a lever. And so we eliminate that. We can make a consistent click force everywhere. And then, you know, going a little bit deeper, you can start to customize those effects. So you can have different forces for different types of clicks. So for example, if I'm, you know, filling out a form and I go to click on a submit button, I might want to make that button have a little bit of higher activation force to avoid like an accidental click. I might want to give you some feedback. So if you click, you know, submit on a form, but you've forgotten to fill out some fields, the touchpad can buzz, and then if you've done everything correctly, it can have a different kind of click feel to tell you that you've submitted successfully.
There's all sorts of dimensions to the feedback that you can get, but also as a user, I can go into the software and I can tweak it to my own personal needs or likes, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can customize the amount of force that it takes to press. You know, if you've got a big hand and large fingers, you might want to customize the palm rejection to be less strict, and you might want to have a higher click force. If you've got, you know, smaller fingers and you press lighter, you might want to customize it the other way. People have very different preferences in terms of the amount of feedback they like for the click. Some people like a really strong click. Some people like it lighter.
Well, and why this might be important is, am I right in assuming that you're talking about making a larger touch area on, say, a laptop? Could I like basically make the entire bottom part of the laptop be functionally the click zone? And so then there's different areas where I can do different things. And that's when you're talking about the palm rejection and stuff like that.
Definitely. And that's, you know, that's kind of our longer term vision, is that these surfaces will start to get larger. They will start to take over the whole palm rest area of the laptop. And we already have programs where we're developing, user experiences like that. So you can start to have, you know, not just a touch surface that's for, you know, controlling a mouse, but as these surfaces get larger, you can imagine being able to write or sketch or do signatures on that surface. You can start to imagine multi-hand control, where you're using both hands in a game or in an artistic use case. You know, using your left hand to position a piece of virtual paper and your right hand to sketch. And then longer term beyond that, there's no reason that we should really have mechanical click pads forever. Like if you imagine the future, it's hard to imagine that we're still going to have these mechanical keys. And where we are going with our technology is eventually being able to replace that mechanical keyboard, but have a user experience that is at least as good, if not better, than you had on your mechanical keyboard. And some of the things we imagine being able to do At a very basic level, is like you can reconfigure that keyboard. So you can change the language, you can change the layout, you can change, you know, it doesn't have to be a keyboard for typing, you know, words and letters. It can be a piano keyboard or a DJ controller. And we've actually explored a lot of these concepts in some of our early products. But making that more ubiquitous, you know, where every laptop can be this kind of very versatile, morphable, creative control surface. And then there's, you know, there's more mundane things like being able to do better autocorrect, learning from the patterns of how the user types, and even, you know, having a keyboard that conforms to your hands versus being having to conform to the shape of a keyboard. All of those things become possible when that surface, you know, goes from being a mechanical fixed thing to being a virtual software controlled thing.
Right, because essentially it becomes programmable. And by the way, I'd encourage people, if you want to Google some of Sensel's, you know, products, they've already created some hardware tools for musicians and the like for these sorts of things. Where, but is what you're saying, you know, sort of this sci-fi, you know, Star Trek: The Next Generation dream of having, you know, a surface that you can type on, which right now people, you know, rightfully so, don't like because it feels like I'm typing on a piece of glass. But are you saying that ultimately the dream is in this area of what you can do for me to be able to type on a virtual keyboard and be able to do it without looking at it because the feedback is so accurate and so good that it'll feel or at least be similar to using a mechanical keyboard?
Exactly. And what we can do today, with the technology we've developed already, is we can simulate the force sensitivity of the keyboard, so we know exactly how hard you're pressing with every finger, and we can provide a very realistic click. So when you press on it, it really feels like you're pressing down and hitting a key. The holy grail and the part that we haven't solved yet, but we want to solve in the near future, is how do you being able to feel the keyboard. So, you know, you can close your eyes and move your hands around the keyboard. You can feel the little nubs under the F and J keys. And you can really type with your eyes closed on a mechanical keyboard today. How can we replicate that virtually? That's, you know, where I want to take the company in the future is being able to do that kind of user experience. And we do think it's totally within the realm of possibility. But it's a very hard problem because, you know, you need to stimulate the receptors in the human finger to give you that tactile feedback. But that's certainly where we see these interfaces going. And like you said, it's really that the vision is like the Star Trek, you know, the next generation interface where, you know, wherever you go on the spaceship, whatever thing you're doing, you're always using these surfaces, right? And they may be different, you know, whether you're the pilot or you're the engineer or the communications officer, you might have a different interface, but the underlying technology is all the same technology and extremely versatile and extremely, high bandwidth kind of control. So you can have that really seamless interface for whatever you're doing.
Right. The idea being like, you know, forget how your car maybe could be programmed for different drivers. Like someday you could sit in front of a compute device and it would, you know, automatically configure itself for your needs or, you know. Put a pin in that, because I want to come back to that at the end and talk about, you know, VR metaverse stuff, which I can see this would maybe come to. But so right now today, primarily Sensel is putting these modules into things like laptops because I believe like Windows 11 has haptic force pad support and things like that. So these are increasingly coming into machines produced by OEMs. Like what I can already see, or I can already buy some laptops that have Sensel inside them, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So our first product was a product we shipped ourselves. It was called the Sensel Morph. And we actually funded that through a Kickstarter in 2015, shipped and have started shipping it in 2017. And then early last year, January 21, our second product was announced, and that is a haptic touchpad that was embedded into Lenovo's top-of-the-line titanium product. And that was really the first time you saw a haptic force pad outside of a MacBook, you know, in the PC world, that was a really high performance, really great user experience. And then our second product in the market was a technology, you know, we actually work with Microsoft on. So the Microsoft Surface Laptop Studio uses some of our technology for their haptic force pad. We didn't develop that force pad, but we kind of worked with Microsoft and helped them to integrate some of our technology to give them really awesome haptics. And what we're working on now is really making those technologies ubiquitous, bringing down the cost, scaling up the production capability, and bringing those to a lot more computers in the near future. And like you mentioned, Microsoft did add software support in the OS for haptics, and that's really been very beneficial for us toward, you know, in terms of accelerating the adoption in the PC ecosystem as well.
Well, speaking of adoption, I mean, I when we spoke before, I think that you had mentioned that if you think of this as like generational change in the technology, that when this last happened, when you know, generally laptops switched to click pads, like it happened really quickly, like in a matter of 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah. I think once the first click pad came out, it was very rapid. And, you know, people thought it would, you know, there's a lot of people that were like, I love my buttons. I never want to get rid of my physical buttons on my touchpad or my click pad. And then, you know, kind of overnight, that kind of design just became outdated, and you really don't see, you know, any laptops on the market with mechanical click pads anymore, you know, outside of a few like ruggedized laptops that the military uses. That's just disappeared. And so I think there's going to be a similar, you know, really rapid transition that's going to happen towards haptic force pads, because, you know, nobody wants to be, nobody wants to ship an outdated design that, in the consumer electronics world, there's kind of these trends, right? And I think there's definitely a trend towards, you know, more simple, more elegant designs, you know, getting rid of mechanical buttons, getting rid of ports, and creating these, you know, really beautiful, seamless user experiences.
So these are the years of the force pad coming to you. Your next laptop will hopefully likely have force pad technology inside it. But we haven't even, you mentioned the rugged laptops. One of the things we haven't talked about or mentioned in terms of what Sensel's technology is good for is you can use it wearing gloves. You can use it in wet environments, all sorts of stuff. So like that also speaks to ways that this technology can evolve beyond, you know, even just laptops or even smartphones.
Definitely. It's one of the benefits of having richer sensing in general. You know, in our technology that we've developed, we have force sensing, and the force sensing can function as a fallback to the capacitive touch, because capacitive touch, you know, fails in certain circumstances. It's generally a great technology, but if you have, you know, moisture, if you're using gloves, you know, if you have electromagnetic interference, capacitive touch can have, you know, false touches or just not function properly. And so by adding richer sensing modalities, you can make that capacitive touch sensor more robust. So we do have technologies that are, you know, really, really good for situations where, you know, maybe it's in a medical environment and you need to make sure that, you know, was that really intentional? Because, you know, an intentional click could have some bad consequences. And then we even have technologies that can work fully, you know, underwater, for example, or, you know, just in drenching rain, and the sensor continues to function perfectly, So that's some of the advantages that I think kind of in the longer tail of what we can do as a company that we can really benefit from.
Tax season is when I rebalance my main retirement portfolio, my dividend growth stock portfolio. I've been using Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, to do that just this very week. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They are the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Well, with Yahoo Finance, securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, their real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. yahoofinance.com, that's yahoofinance.com.
So this is, you know, imagining, you know, this sort of technology on heavy duty hardware out on a construction site, or as you're saying, like in a hospital where people need to use it while still wearing gloves and things like that. But so if you combine that, this, you know, ability to use it in all sorts of settings that you couldn't use touch technology before, if you combine that with the fact that, you know, we can increase the size of it, it's not like a little, you know, post-it note size thing. You could, like, could we one day have the entire dashboard of a car essentially be a smart surface that, again, which would solve problems, because what people complain about with their Teslas is like, I need the knob. Like, you know, I'm missing that ability to turn the air up and down by not even looking at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, we can solve the two biggest problems of a touch sensor, you know, in a car, which is, one is like, you don't know if you've pressed it because you don't have any feedback. And the second is, you don't know where you are because you're looking, you know, you're looking ahead at the road. So you don't know if you're, you know, you're on the volume control button, or you're on the temperature, you know, or you've slipped off because you hit a bump. You know, we can bring back some of that tactility that we lost with physical controls. And in a car, it's interesting because you have a lot of these surfaces. You know, you have controls for the windows and doors. You have controls, you know, the main console, but you've also got steering wheels and palm rests. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of areas, a lot of opportunities for some of our technology that we've been developing to enhance those experiences.
So also, if you achieve your dream of, you know, having the real 3D feedback and stuff like that, then we are talking about solving the holy grail problem of the VR and the metaverse, where in future you don't even have to look at it, but you can get actual feedback and touch that might be tied to what you're doing in some sort of AR or VR environment.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things I'm personally really, really excited about is the possibilities of AR, because once you have, you know, an AR, you know, a really good AR display that you're wearing in the form of goggles or glasses, you know, any surface that you interact with can become this smart virtual surface. But you're still going to need some way to sense the touch, to sense the force, to provide feedback. So we can start to imagine, you know, we have these larger touch surfaces that can be, you know, anywhere in your house, on your table, on your wall. And then as soon as you approach them, you know, the AR display can overlay graphics onto those surfaces. But you can still have that rich tactility and feedback. You don't have to just do gestures in the air. You know, you can have something physical that you're interacting with, but that you've got, you know, visual representations also overlaid on top of. So I think it's going to be a really exciting space to explore. You know, the display technology really hasn't been there up till now to make those experiences really great. You know, there's a lot of rumors out there and speculation that a lot of that is being solved, and that we're going to see some really great products, around some of those display technologies coming out. And we're really excited about, you know, being able to help augment those experiences with some of our TouchForce and haptics technology.
Well, I think we can announce or confirm, obviously, by doing this episode, that Ride Home Fund was an investor in your Series B. Next couple years, next 18 months or so, going to be exciting times for Sensel?
Definitely. Closed the first half of our Series B at the end of 21. And I can announce we closed $9 million. I was led by a Taiwanese CM called Global Lighting Technologies that actually specializes in a lot of really cool lighting technology that's very complementary to what we do with our touch sensing and haptics technology. We were really excited, to have Ride Home Fund be a part of that round. And we are also looking to close another $9 million in the near future, and that's well underway. We're going to take that funding to accelerate, the development of our technologies and the scale up of production. I think in the very near future, you're going to see a lot more of Sensel technology and a lot more of the products that you use every day. And really the goal is for someday this technology to become ubiquitous and kind of, in a lot of places where you're going to be interacting with electronic devices.
Well, and the idea behind doing this the way we're doing it is that all of the Ride Home audience hopefully can become excited about this technology too. And to that end, if people want to find out more, should people start asking for, make sure there's Sensel inside when they buy a laptop? Do you have any asks for the audience in terms of just generally tell us how we can continue to be fans of Sensel going forward?
I think the best way is just to just to pay attention to the kind of the interaction technology that you're using in your devices. When you're buying a laptop, check out what kind of touch sensor, is it using? Is there haptic feedback? Is there force feedback? Kind of tell your friends about it. A lot of people that use Apple products get used to a certain user experience, and they're shocked when they go and try other products. Like they try a PC and they're like, oh wow, this touchpad is terrible. But people don't realize why that is. They don't realize that, Apple's invested probably hundreds of millions of dollars to develop that touchpad or that keyboard or the touch sensor on their iPhone. There's a lot of really cool technology that goes into that. But there's no reason that it should be limited to the products of one company. We need to, start to bring these better user experiences to other products, other technologies in our lives. And that's what Sensel is doing. So I think, just be more aware of your interactions with technology. I think be more discerning, I guess, and demanding of products that you buy, that they do, invest in making these interactions better. Because, these technologies are, we're using them day in and day out, and especially, with what we've had over the last few years with the pandemic. I mean, we're, doing work remotely, we're studying remotely, we're using our computers all day. Like, why shouldn't we have better? Better interaction technologies for these things that we're doing doing all day. These technologies should be they should really be optimized for the person rather than the person having to, you know, train themselves and fit themselves into a mold or a box of how they use their technology. And that's what we're trying to do at Sensel.
No more conforming to the hardware. The hardware conforms to you. Yes. Listen, anybody out there listening, if this is interesting to you and exciting, get in touch with me and I will pass you along to Sensel. But Ilya, thank you so much for being the first to come on and tell us about your company, and very exciting times ahead, and happy 2022.
Thank you, Brian. It's been really fun talking to you. Thank you for the opportunity and for the investment, and happy 2022 to you and all your listeners as well.